Welcome back to the show. We have a conversation on the Pualugu multi-purpose dam. But first though, let's look at the numbers and why this dam is so very important. So the sword cutting ceremony was on November 29, 2019, almost a few months into the 2020 election. It's been 4 years, 5 months, and of course 28 days up until now. And we'll get to see the state of affairs of the Pualugu Dam, and then we'll hear how. So, as at the time, President Akufo-Addo cut the sword for work to start in 2019. The expectation was that upon completion, it was going to be able to produce 60 megawatts of hydropower, 50 megawatts of solar power, and then also for irrigation purposes at a cost of $993 million, just some few million short of $1 billion. And then for provide reliable and stable electricity supply to the national grid, provide an irrigation scheme in the northern part of Ghana, improve water supply to the northern parts of the country, also to address the perennial flooding in the northern region caused by the heavy rains and the spillage from the Bagre Dam in Burkina Faso. And it came to light during a recent public accounts committee sitting that 12 million had been paid. When the auditors were asked, they said they were given clear directives. They didn't check what the 12 million was being paid for, yet they paid, and was collaborated by the governor of the Bank of Ghana, Dr. Ines Addison, who was also before the public accounts committee. So the project is facing financial challenges. The vice president said that he is determined to find the resources to complete the construction of the dam. It remains a priority for him. This was his comments a week or two ago when he visited the enclave. And of course, as you may be aware, some members on the minority, on the Mines Energy Committee, led by the ranking member, John Jinapo, they said they will activate all the parliamentary processes to retrieve the amount of money, almost $200 million, that has been dashed to this contractor. Somebody must be held accountable. And he is in the studio here with me to share more lights on this developing issue. Right, so let's now come to the studio. So, John, you are welcome to the pause.
Thank you.
And so you were there over the weekend. You are just coming from the north.
Yeah.
Long journey, right?
Quite a long journey, especially off the main road.
Okay.
You know, you drive from Tamale on the way to Bolga, then you do a tear off and drive quite a distance, about 30 minutes to a village called, I think it's Gurugu.
Okay.
And then you drive another, say, 5 or 10 kilometers, then you get to the site proper. And so the team, and let me thank your team as well, your media house was well represented. We left Tamale together and went to have a fair sun view for ourselves. Sometimes you can sit in Accra and make all the commentary, but there are times that you need to be there physically. Speak to the people. We went to the paramount chief, spoke to the chief, spoke to some opinion leaders. The chief himself delegated some of his elders to accompany us to the site.
Right.
And so, to cut it short, we want to have a first-hand view and to see for ourselves the state of the project.
So that was the motivation, to understand what is going on there.
Absolutely. Like you said, somewhere in November 2019, right, even before the parliamentary approval, President Akufo-Addo went to the north and cut the sword for the Pualugu Dam. And if you may allow me,
right,
just to quote what he said: "This is in fulfillment of the pledge the MPP government made to the people as a campaign pledge." He had pledged that his administration would complete the Pualugu Dam. And so almost 4 years into the election, and like you said, just entering into the 2020 election, he realized that it's not been done. So he went there with the vice president himself and cut the sword and said he's fulfilling his campaign pledge. We do not renege on our promises. That's what Akufo-Addo says. We keep them. The president pointed out, President Akufo-Addo indicated that the project will be the single largest investment ever made by any government in the northern part of the country.
Right.
So not only is he fulfilling a campaign pledge, he says that no government, apart from his government, is ever undertaking that project. So in February 2020, the agreement came to Parliament. Contrary to what the president has said, we did not find any provision in the 2020 budget. I know the 2020 budget is read in November 2019.
Yes.
So when he cut the short and said
the budget had been read.
Between that time, the budget had been read. But more importantly, when the agreement came to Parliament, we then saw Power China. And we said, first of all, how come government is using its own money?
Yes, because that's what we're told.
Power China.
That this will be internally generated funds to construct the dam.
When we checked, it was disguised as a loan. Just like the Sino Hydro Facility, which the vice president led, and eventually, now all of us come to the realization that it's not a barter deal, but it was a loan disguised as a so-called barter deal by the vice president. So we raised the issues. But the majority made it look as if we were trying to sabotage the project, made all kinds of issues about it. And so we raised the issues, but allow it pass. Deadline of 48 months,
right,
which is 4 years. They cut the soil in 2019. So discount 2019, 2020, 2021, 2022, end of 2023.
It should be commissioned now.
Commissioned it by end. That is it. This is a good project. We started the feasibility in 2013. Under President Mahama, we secured funding from Agence France de Développement with technical support from the World Bank to conduct the feasibility study. We are looking at the environmental and social impact assessment and all that, which we
call. So it's always been on the drawing board.
Always been on the drawing board. And the project is supposed to deal with three main challenges or objectives.
Right.
One, irrigation. The president himself gave all the issues, tomato. Today, if you go to the market, I went to the market, with 20 cedi, you can get only 4 tomato pieces or whatever you call
absolutely
it.
Right.
Four. That's
paint,
a fact.
The paint is around 200 Ghana
cedi. It's a fact. It's two. And then, so it will boost tomato production. Rice import was supposed to decline by 16%. Sugar cane and all of that, so agriculture. The second one is the power component, electricity. 60 megawatts of hydropower and then 50 megawatts of solar power. Then the most important thing for me was to serve as a bulwark or to stop the perennial flooding from the Bagre Dam.
Right.
So for us, it was a very good project, but we felt that it was inflated. 993 million, half of it goes for just a hydro dam. If you look at Bui Dam, it was about 400 or so. So we thought that it was very, very well. The president was bent on getting it through, so we allowed it. 4 years down the lane, at a public accounts hearing, and this is what triggered our visit.
Exactly.
The auditor general flags it that some payment has been made, but there's no work done. Not members of parliament, the auditor general flags it that, look, government has made 12 million, or 11.949 is like 12 million. At today's exchange rate of about 16 cedi, that's about 192 million. That's a colossal amount. So the Public Accounts Committee then asked Bank of Ghana, why would you pay without verification? And the Bank of Ghana said, we are only a bank. You have money in your accounts.
Yes.
If you authorize the bank to pay, they'll pay. It's your duty, the one authorizing, to ensure that due diligence is done. And for every project, whichever stage you reach, there's a project consultant. He would inspect, certify, and indicate that the project is ready stage, raise some payment vouchers, it goes through the system. So we started doing our checks.
And that's my difficulty. I mean, I remember one of your, a member on the minority side put the question to the auditors who were there. In fact, first put the question to the governor. And the governor referred the question to the auditors. And the auditors said they were under instructions to pay. and then and so they wrote to the controller, and then the auditor was asked, so you didn't verify, you don't have people who go on the ground and say that this is what we are paid for. What certificate was raised for you to release almost $12 million to somebody and you couldn't provide any answer?
And for me that is scandalous. I mean, $12 million, you just pay it to the company. Where is the consultant's report? Like you say, where is the certificate?
Exactly.
What's the extent of work done? So we tried to raise questions from government officials and they were not forthcoming. VL appeared before our committee. They couldn't give any answers. They said they were not aware of the payments. And so the minority leader then dispatched the Mines and Energy Committee that we should go there ourselves.
Before you go there and tell us, I mean, perhaps I can let my viewers appreciate what we are talking about. So this matter appeared before the Public Accounts Committee. Listen to the explanation that came from the Governor of the Bank of Ghana and the auditors who were there to assist the work of the committee.
They could give the information back to us on what was done.
Page 23. Somewhere you will see final payment for construction of the Kwalogo Irrigation Project. Yes. Kwalogo Irrigation Project, final payment.
Where?
Final payment for the construction of the Kwalogo Irrigation Project. The question is, I thought probably before payments are made, contractors present certificates. Because when you get to Kwalogo, there's nothing there. There's no even a pool. There's no even a signboard. And if the contractor is taking $11 million, there's nothing. There is no even a what do we call it? Like a container. You can't even see the project site. So what certificate was presented before this money was paid? That's my question. I want to know why, how that money was paid.
Yes, he will answer.
I think the amount you are referring to was paid in 2021, not 2022. And the auditors would have to tell us because they must have cited their documentations before they wrote this report. The auditor general, yeah. So maybe they can explain.
Auditors, could you help us out over here? It says final payment. Now the honorable member is saying that there's nothing at that site. I'm sure when you did the audit, you saw something.
Honorable Chair, controller instructed him to pay and they paid. We are not aware whether the project has been completed or there's nothing ongoing.
Yes, sir.
Chairman, I'm not happy with the response from the auditors. Because as part of the audit, they simply don't verify payment regularities. They do in-situ inspection of projects. So yes, you may be at the headquarters, but the regional officers who are closer to the project could have gone to site to ascertain that not merely paying for the project on paper, but the project has actually been delivered. So that's my first follow-up. My second one is the Kwalogo Irrigation Project is different from the Kwalogo Multi-Purpose Dam. So I want to find out that this payment is not in respect of the dam, but it's actually the irrigation which says farmers. Who is the auditors? They saw the document. Because the governor actually clarified that it's the auditors. I think the auditors are supposed to. Yes, so they should be speaking to the document, the nature of the document that they saw. Otherwise, then, Chairman, I seek your leave to demand that the documents based upon which these payments was made should be furnished. We should be furnished a copy of the set of documents for purposes of further interrogation of this matter.
I think the auditors could review it and then give us an update on what which one it is. And since it says final payment, they could give the information back to us on what was done.
Right, so welcome back to the show. So those were excess from the Public Accounts Committee when this matter came up. And the committee, from what we understand, is trying to get the document, the certificate that warranted the payment of almost $12 million. We reached out to government. They said they are unable for any comments on this matter as of now. But the NDC is not allowing this matter to lie down. That's how come they went on a side visit. John Jinapo is a ranking member on the committee, and he's still with me in the studio as we try to unpack this very important matter. So, John, you heard what transpired. I'm scandalized by the response coming from Nutras. And Nutras, I mean the Auditor General's representative who are the public committee who facilitated the payment, yet cannot provide evidence to back whatever they have, you know, approved for payment.
Now, let me clarify something. Okay. What auditors do is that they come to audit your accounts. And so if they find irregularities, they will flag those irregularities. They will then demand for documentary evidence. Mm-hmm. If you're unable to provide that documentary evidence, mm-hmm. they qualify it. It's brought back, you give comments, and they give their final comments.
Right.
So it is not obligatory for auditors to necessarily visit the site. If you can't even give them documentation, there's no need visiting that site.
Mm-hmm.
It's when you give them documentation and say you've completed
the work,
then they may want to go and verify. But when you don't have anything to show that you've done any work, there'll be no need to go there. So I do not fault the auditors. I fault the Ministry of Finance, AGRIC, and the officials who directed that almost $12 million be paid to Power China International when no work is being done.
So what did you find when you went there?
So we tried to find out from the ministries why that payment is being made. What accounted for that?
Mm-hmm.
There was no information forthcoming. So I briefed minority leader, and his advice was that we should go there ourselves. Perhaps something is happening. Perhaps the project has reached a certain stage.
Mm-hmm.
Because even that terminology of final payment,
I don't understand what that means.
$12 million cannot be final payment for $193 million.
Right.
Can only be part payment. So we set off to go there, I think this Saturday, and Joy Multimedia, your media house, you were ably represented.
Oh, but yeah, we have done a documentary on this matter.
Absolutely. And let me commend you for that. So we visited the chief first of all. And the chief said when the Chinese contracted visited the place, they decided to evacuate their nurses from the nurses' quarters and then gave that building to them.
Okay.
Because that project was so dear to their hearts that they wanted to see that project succeed by all means. So they gave them that building. The only thing the contractor did was to buy a heap of sand, I think 2 heaps of gravel, chippings.
Mm-hmm.
And then we counted, I think, 216 blocks. At the site.
216.
16. We counted them. We took time to count all the blocks, ordinary blocks. And the chief was at pain. I mean, the chief told us that once Dr. Baumia, who hails from the region, led that initiative and came there and personally promised them, they had absolute confidence that their own will not let them down.
Mm.
And that's, they were not even so particular about what President Akufo-Addo said. But once they knew that their own son, a son of the soil, a son of the region, who has had the privilege of heading the economic management team and as vice president, they knew that that project would succeed. And for like 4 years, nothing was happening until recently, the Chinese contractor decided to pack and leave. And you know the sad part? When they were leaving, a private businessman in the town, they sold the blocks to him.
The 216 blocks.
Yes, they sold the gravel to him and they sold the sand to the person. So technically speaking, there's nothing at site.
Mm-hmm.
We went to the dam site where the gorge is supposed to be, where We're supposed to start the irrigation project, and absolutely nothing. So the question is, why engage in this grand deception? But more importantly, where did the $12 million go? Now the contractor has left the shores of Ghana, he's gone.
And I guess these are questions you'll be demanded from governments.
Absolutely.
From parliament's approach.
Absolutely.
But I also do remember that, I mean, during the debt restructuring exercise, after COVID and the economic meltdown that we went through, we got an explanation that the reason why the project has stalled was the fact that financing was not forthcoming.
From where?
And, I mean, just like you alluded to the fact that it came as a loan in the budget, in a way. Now from what, they will not go on record, but to say that last week they had an MOU from the OCC, that's the Official Creditor Committee, giving indication that they may be ready to play ball with government. So the possibility of some store project restarting is very high. I don't know how you react to this.
But that doesn't even restart any project. First of all, the agreement with the creditor simply means that you owe people, you want to restructure. Either the tenure, either the principal, or the interest component, or all of, or part of it. That's what you seek to do, to give you some respite. Don't forget our debt keeps ballooning. A recent report shows that $47 million CDs in just 2 months.
Yeah.
And that's a huge amount.
Like currently around 558 billion Ghana.
600 and something. That's serious. Meanwhile, we're not servicing our debt, external debt. We've suspended.
Mm-hmm.
It's compounding. So the next administration will have to come and deal with all these challenges. But you see, the most important, let's even assume we are having financial challenges. You're having financial challenges, you are dashing 12 million. You come and tell me, look, I want to build this house. I don't have money. Things are difficult. Only for me to realize that you've dashed the contractor 12 million and he's absconded with that money. And what kind of cock and bull story is this? You cannot be serious. What did the contractor do? Because the first thing the contractor does, either site preparation or at least construct what they call there's a technical term where they stay to engage in the construction,
right?
The construction site.
Mm-hmm.
You will see that they will raise some temporal structures,
yeah, or
something. That means
to give impression that something
that we are ready to move in.
Mm-hmm.
But when they go and live in nurses' quarters and only put a heap of sand and come and take 12 million from you, it's nothing but a scam.
So what would we be demanding? I mean, Parliament will be coming back in the House pretty soon.
So we would...
And again, the other question, whether you think, will this project ever see the light of day?
For what you're saying? Not under this administration. I mean, under this administration, they can't do it. And the Vice President says that he's committed to securing...
It remains a priority for...
Your first man to leave office. What priority?
In the event that he becomes president.
That will not happen. That will not happen. And that must not happen. This guy should leave office, so we investigate them.
Mm.
This guy should leave office, so that just as we were subjected to all the scrutiny, including bringing military men to our houses and dragging us out with AK-47s, we wouldn't do that. But let's subject them to scrutiny, all of them. This 12 million, somebody must answer for it. Dr. Baumia cannot retrieve this 12 million. He would not prosecute his own. So it cannot even happen. We must not even contemplate it.
Mm.
Let them leave. They've had 8 years. We did the feasibility. We secured funding. We handed over to them. They've messed it up. They've shown that they don't have the take. They don't have what it takes. They don't have the goodwill. They don't have even the knowledge to deal with such projects. So clearly, what Dr. Baumia is saying is nothing but an election gimmick, and I think that nobody should fall for that. So there are two strands.
Right.
Next month, when we resume, we're going to file all the necessary parliamentary processes.
Mm-hmm.
I'll brief minority leader tomorrow, and then we'll activate the parliamentary processes. We may summon the minister, we may consult a committee to inquire and to get the facts. But more importantly, the second stage is that on assumption of office, President Mahama will call for a detailed investigation into this matter.
Mm.
Who raised whatever certificate, if there was none? Who authorized payment? Why did the finance minister do that? Why did the ministers do that? Who are the technical officers? Where did the money land? Even if it means engaging our Chinese counterparts,
we'll do that.
We'll engage them and retrieve this money and reapply it into that process.
Just 1 second, let me bring in just 2 individuals so that I can let you go. Abasori is our APA East regional correspondent. and you accompanied the team on this site visit. Albert, you're welcome to the pulse.
Thank you.
Right. Also is Professor David Miller. Prof. Miller, it's good to have you on the pulse. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, and good afternoon to your cherished viewers and listeners.
So, Albert, just brief, what did you see from an independent point of view?
Well, Elton, so in the 2022 documentary that I did, titled The Dam of Promises, we showed in the documentary that apart from the contractor's campsite, which is what Honorable was just talking about, where the house, the equipment, was on about 2 to 3 plots of land. So they used this zinc material, the one they use in making fences. I don't know what it is called, but they had that, and they used that to fence the entire area, and they had several containers which were told out the equipment. At the time that I first went and saw this campsite, it was in 2020, and there was only a security guard. Nobody was staying there, but these containers, which was supposed to be housing the equipment, was there. Now, when I started the production of the documentary 2022, this was in August, I visited the place. I had already heard by then that the contractor had visited the place. And this was the only known, construction campsite that existed. There wasn't any of that where else.
Okay.
So we went there and we found that in fact the campsite had vanished. At the time, the region, who at the time was acting as a chief, told us that he had come to say the place was getting flooded, and that is why they made the equipment come back. And then later they got information that he was moving the equipment going construction of road Kumasi. So the stories were different. But what we realized when we visited the site at the time was that there was no sign of flooding at all in the area. And this was the same place that we visited on Saturday together with the Honorable John Paul King. And it was the same thing. The campsite was nowhere found. These chickens and the blocks that he mentioned were the ones that were there. Now, let me also just say this. After we aired the documentary September of 2022, about a month later, the Peasant Farmers Association of Ghana had a demonstration on this Kualogun Airport Dam. They had this demonstration in the Northeast region, specifically at Aleribu. Now, before the demonstration, they also visited the same. And this was when it first came to light that the chickens and the blocks had been sold. This is what the committee members told the Peasant Farmers Association of Ghana leaders when they visited the site. So, in the course of my work on this, the only thing that we know has been done as far as the construction is concerned is stakeholder consultations. They had a number of stakeholder meetings in Boga. I remember two of them. One of them was held at the conference hall of the Regional Coordinating Council, and another one was held at a hotel here called Tap Hotel. Then there were community engagement. So in the documentary, when we spoke to farmers in Kualogu and Kurugu, where this campsite is, the visuals you are seeing are from the community called Kurugu, and this is where the contractor was located. Now, Kurugu is located in the northeast region. And what we are told is that just after all the mapping and the survey they did, they realized that the dam itself could not be located in Kualogu, but it would be in Kurugu and some other villages around the northeast region. And that is why the contractor was staying there and doing his work. So the farmers in Kualogu told us that they had come there, met with them. Some they even mapped their lands, took photocopies of their land documents to prepare them for when their lands were supposed to be taken from them as part of the construction. So this is what we know the government did, as far as the construction of the dam was concerned. Now there's another community also in the northeast region called Sarba. In that community, they had a building which we were told was supposed to help in the take-up of irrigation components of the dam.
Right.
But that building also was not completed. It was built, roofed, but there wasn't much finishing. It was overgrown with weeds, and the contractor had also left it. So in our recent visit, absolutely nothing had changed. The same things I saw there in 2022 were the very same things we saw when we visited Basta.
And my final question would be, I know that you've been trying to get answers, especially from the VRA. Any success in that?
So for the VRA, they had appointed a PRO who was acting until, who was speaking for them on issues of the town. But at the time that we were doing the documentary, he told us he had moved from VRA to another institution and was no longer working for them. So since then, we've not been able to know who particularly speak to from the side of the VRA. Try to make contact, but we haven't
made
it yet in terms of getting
out. Thank you very much, Abbas. So, our regional correspondent David Miller is president of the Miller Institute for Transdisciplinary and Development Studies. So, David, Prof, you've been listening to our correspondent. You also heard the on-site report from the Ranking Member on the Mines and Energy Committee. What is your reading of what is happening?
Well, thank you. My reading is a very simple one. There is a facility, God-given facility, that we could use to inure to the development of our country. Very strategic, and based on my analysis, with a far-reaching benefits than the negatives. But here we are trying to resolve or to maximize the use of the facility in a political domain. And for me, it's the politics that is limiting the realization of this dream. Why do I say so? I've heard Honorable Jinapo lament about some malfeasance or some misapplications of funds. Be that as it may, since when did we start blowing the whistle that this was happening? For me, I had to do a bit of the stakeholder consultation as a consultancy in 2021. And I did highlight, my report is still here. First of all, I blew the drums that the project is at Kurugu and not Palugu. And the additional designs that have been built in are quite rewarding, but none of them will benefit Upper East. So that was my critical role. Now, beyond that, I did demonstrate quite clearly that nothing is happening there and nothing has happened there. I thought that the opposition, which was then NDC, would start doing the whistleblowing or doing the countervailing. But we sat there. Whilst NPP kept saying they were investing and they were developing, we could have interrupted that thing very early. I must say, as I sit here, as an expert, I don't know the cost of the dam.
That was gave a figure of almost $1 billion.
And I'm saying that that dam has been revised twice over. In fact, the dam size has been reduced, the height has been reduced, and the technical document shows that therefore the cost will be lower. As to how low it is, I don't know.
Are you able to tell us who put together this cost?
Which cost?
You said that the cost has lowered, and I'm asking based on what?
I'm saying the new design, the redesign,
In fact, the one I think that started prepared the action that MPP is referring to, the height has been reduced by 5 meters. And every technical person will tell you that once you reduce the height of the dam, the cost will change. Now, it was meant to be first hydro, and then agriculture and flood management and so on. The redesign has changed the thing around, and it's first agro, and then hydro and flood and so on. So even the emphasis changed in the latest design.
Right.
But I'm saying that I don't know how much the cost varied. And I think that the auditors and the Bank of Ghana should do us some help by coming out with the actual figures.
Yes, Prof. Miller, if you can hold it for me. John Jinapol has a quick intervention here.
Prof.
Yeah?
Well, he was my lecturer, so I was your student. First of all, Prof, nobody can go ahead and implement that project by changing it without recourse to Parliament. It will be illegal. Parliament has approved the scope of work. We've approved certain estimates. We expect certain benefits. And so if the MPP goes to sit somewhere and decides to change the scope of work and change figures, they must come to Parliament and seek approval. Without that, what Parliament has approved stands and nothing else. So our plea is to let's stick to what we've officially approved. If they find it necessary that there should be some modification, they can come to Parliament. We will discuss that.
No.
Yes, please.
What I'm saying is that the technical document I had to work with as a consultant indicated that the EU had disagreed with the social and environmental impact of the dam, and has suggested a redesign. I'm talking about more research, but I haven't gone the way of costs. I'm only saying what the technical document was saying to me.
And he's saying that this document is alien to Parliament. They can only work with what was approved in the House.
Granted. Granted, there are a lot of things that have been alien to Parliament, and yet people run with it. We hear them every day, we read them every day. So I believe you.
Okay.
But is that out of the ordinary? I'm just telling you what I have by way of a technical document.
Mm-hmm.
My bottom line is that both political groups have let the North down. They've disappointed that. The policeman role to be played by NDC wasn't played. And the implementation role, like my good brother Albasoro has said, by MPP, hasn't also happened. The thing hasn't been happened. The policeman rule or the whistleblower rule was not there. Until now. Until now. So I think that, for me, I've been preoccupied with concerns about the way forward.
Correct something.
I've designed... I made suggestions to the fact that the two roles should be very clear, both the role of the incumbent government and its opposition. We should charge them jointly and collectively responsible for this facility.
But that has
been my role.
Just a quick question so that I can allow George Napo to come because he has another intervention. When we hear that $12 million has been paid to the contractor,
when did he didn't pay?
And we don't even have... the reasons behind the payment, what conclusion can you possibly come to?
Well, if you tell me that is a conclusive payment, it means there are earlier payments before that.
Yes, and they describe it as final.
Yeah, if they say this is final, then a lot more has been paid before. And if you ask me, I can give you a guesstimate, but I don't want to go there. I'm saying that a lot has been paid more than
$12 million.
$2 million.
More than the $12 million?
Yes, more.
Wow.
Because I was a consultant and I was paid.
You were paid for doing what?
For doing the stakeholder consultations. No. That's how I started.
Prof, no problem with that.
John.
Prof, your payment, I have no problem with that. You did your work, so it's not an issue for me. But if you were to read the parliamentary reports, every year we debated this matter in Parliament. Every year we raised it in parliament. And every time VRA appeared,
honestly, the debates don't go far enough.
Let me deal with that.
If you can allow John just a second, Prof, you can allow John a second, and then I'll allow you.
Yeah, Prof is talking about forensic investigation, but let me learn that every year, if you read our reports, we deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
What has heightened this is the fact that there appear to be some financial loss to the state.
Right.
Projects, you conceptualize projects, sometimes maybe because of unforeseen circumstances, you are unable to fulfill that. I mean, you can't hold government entirely responsible. Mm. And so to say that we should hold government responsible, even if government doesn't have the money to do it, still insists that they do it, you could do that, but you have to be careful. But when government appears to be wasting the money, then the ball game is changed. And this was captured in the Auditor General's report.
Right.
They paid this money in a clandestine manner with a high level of opacity. It is only the audit that has unearthed this. And that is why the Public Accounts Committee took it up. And that's why we've also taken it up. Mm-hmm. So we are dealing with two strands. Completion of project, we can deal with that. Right. Government might say that we're expecting funds are not coming. Because you budget, you may not get it. But when you waste the money,
mm-hmm.
you throw the money away. And now we're even hearing that it's more than the $12 million. That raises serious concerns. And I agree with you, Prof, that we need a forensic audit. But this forensic audit
mm-hmm.
can only be commissioned by the government. The opposition cannot commission a forensic audit. That is why I hold the view that Dr. Bawumia and the MPP must leave. When President Mahama assumes office, we would commission this forensic audit. And whoever is found culpable, whoever is found liable, I bet you, Prof, we will deal with that person mercilessly.
Prof, so I mean, as we wrap up on the conversation, I mean, the importance of this project, everybody accepts that it is the best. I mean, projects designed to generate electricity, hydropower, solar, irrigation issues, and to deal with the flooding. Clearly, I mean, nobody can dispute that. So what should be the way forward as we progress on this conversation? Are we likely to see this done? Or we should just wash it off?
My brother, let's do a two-pronged approach.
Right.
Those who have the powers and the ability to do the financials should go ahead. And then we, those who are not financially sound in financial matters, should also continue with our advocacies. My recent document shows that it's to benefit seven regions.
Mm.
Seven regions, not two. Upper East, Upper West, Northwest, Savannah, Northern, Oti, and Bravo. You know, what the project document did was to design the water that is used for irrigation. They haven't designed the flow after irrigation, what we call wastewater.
Mm.
That has ability to do more than twice the irrigation that was intended. And I'm putting together an advocacy document that shows why we should all show concern about this project. No, don't leave it for the North alone. It's not only the North that will be turned around.
Mm-hmm.
All these seven regions will be turned around by that single project.
All right.
Prof, based on your intervention, it does then appear that government rushed to parliament and that the actual proper work had not been done. And so it will look like elections was approaching, and then they rushed to parliament, went and commissioned or cut the sword. When, like you are saying, the tailwater had not even been addressed. And I thought that should be an area that people like you would guide us going forward. So that the politicians don't just come because of politics, they rush to go and cut sword, even when parliament has not approved the contract.
Mm.
The president cut the sword in 2019. The agreement was approved in February 2020. So, for all intents and purposes, the government never meant.
The Memorial Day sale is on at Planet Fitness. So take the plunge, make waves, and finally say, I've got this. And right now at Planet Fitness, 27 cents down will kickstart your best summer ever with free fitness training in our cool, clean, and spacious judgment-free zone filled with tons of equipment for every workout. Join Planet Fitness today for just 27 cents down, then $10 a month. Hurry, deal ends May 31st.
Don't miss our best deal ever. 27 cents down, then $10 a month.
As a veteran, I live with health impacts from my service. VA healthcare means you're in 100% control of your own medical care, your own benefits, and it only takes minutes to set up. A veteran should enroll in VA healthcare because it ensures that they get quality, high-level care for the rest of their lives. My service was then, my benefits are now.
Get what you earned. Visit choose.va.gov. Not all veterans are eligible for the type or amount of benefits mentioned here.
McDonald's presents Burger Reviews by Hamburglar. Today's review, the hotter, juicier classic burgers. Mr. Hamburglar.
Rubble, rubble.
He said, of all the McDonald's burgers I've ever hamburgled, these are the hottest, juiciest, and tastiest.
Rubble.
Hamburglary is on the rise. Get caught with a medium double cheeseburger meal for $6. Price and participation may vary. Promotion pricing may be lower than meal price. Comparison to prior classic burgers.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
With the way and manner the contract was awarded.
And so we awarded the contract to an entity.
Yes. And that's also awesome. And we have serious challenges with that. We're going to deal with that. We are writing to Talo themselves and we'll address that issue. We also have issues with the way oil is being procured for our thermal plants. It does appear that some huge areas have been accumulated for the Mahama government to inherit under very opaque circumstances. We intend to deal with that.
And this is for power generation?
It is for power generation. Mm. So we have quite a lot of work to do. Yeah. But we'll try and take all of them. And when we resume in Parliament, this Palogu scandal will feature in Parliament.
But and then last week, Friday, we're privy to a communication that came from the MPA inviting another company, H-Field, to do a presentation on what appears to be the same thing being done in the petroleum downstream by SML.
Absolutely. And we'll send a signal to MPA. And my message is simple. Don't try anything funny. The systems in place
are aware of this company.
I'm aware. We've sent a signal to Mustafa. Don't try anything funny, because we wouldn't tolerate that, wouldn't countenance that. The systems currently are robust enough. If it needs tweaking in-house, you can deal with that. Secondly, even if you want a solution, it should be a holistic solution.
Right.
All the agencies, GRA, MPA, BOST, all of them, including the BDCs, we must sit together and fashion out a framework that will serve everybody's interests. This pocket of isolated attempts to sign last-minute contracts and last-minute deals, we will resist them. There are a lot of them coming up, not just in the energy sector. Several areas. People are trying to sign
my concern is the comments,
6-year contracts.
Yeah.
We won't tolerate.
My concern is the earlier comments that came from the MPA when this SML came up, that it was a duplication. If it was, then why even open the space for...
That's why I said they shouldn't try it. Because before our committee, we visited the MPA head office. And they told us clearly that the SML contract was a duplication. Mm-hmm. It's on record. And that their system was robust enough to provide GRA with all the information they required. Mm-hmm. So what has changed? All of a sudden, that robust system... Are you telling us it's no longer robust? Please, if you're watching this program, a friend is watching, tell the MPA boss that I say don't. Simple.
John Junapor is a ranking member on the Mines and Energy Committee of Parliament, and more coming your way here on The Pulse. We'll take a short break. When we return, the Attorney General must resign. That's the view of a former director of the Ghana School of Law, a veteran law lecturer, and himself a private legal practitioner, Professor Ansah Asare. False allegations that the Attorney General may have coerced a witness in the ongoing trial of the minority leader, KCL Atoforce. And we have more details for you when we return. Welcome back to The Pulse here on Joy News with me, Elton Brobe. Now, to another very controversial matter that, you know, hit the airwaves last week. It's still a raging matter. The Attorney General must resign. That's the view of a former director of the Ghana School of Law, a veteran law lecturer, and himself a private legal practitioner, Professor Ansah Asare. If those allegations that the Attorney General Godfrey Yeboah-Dame as an accused person in the trial of Dr. KCL Atoforce to incriminate the minority leader. The Attorney General has denied any wrongdoing in a meeting of the accused Richard Dakpa, a businessman, a public legal practitioner and law lecturer, Dr. Justice Rimside, is calling for a commission of inquiry or a special parliamentary probe into the allegation. But Professor Ansansa, I believe the AG must be working already. All right, so let me bring in Professor Ansansa. Prof, it's a pleasure to have you on the pulse. Yes, Prof, it's a pleasure to have you on the pulse. You are quite clear and emphatic that AG must go. Why?
First of all, let me make a small correction. I'm Mr. Ancestor, not Mr. Ancestor. Okay, so I'm asking the Attorney General to resign because from the report published to the AGI of today, it seems to me that he has compromised himself. He had no business being in the House of the Justice of the Supreme Court in response to an arranged meeting with accused persons in that House. Secondly, as Attorney General, he knows the scope of his responsibility. Now, in a plea bargaining transaction, usually, it is the Director of Public Prosecution who discharges or performs that function. The Attorney General is assisted by two deputies.
Right.
And in such a sensitive criminal trial, the justice, the criminal justice system requires the Attorney General to be above board for him to accept an invitation to meet at his person in the House of the sitting justice of the Supreme Court.
Right.
It stinks. And I don't think that the Attorney General, you know, can remain in office and, you know, participate in whatever inquiry that, you know, the president will set up. In any case, I have no confidence in any presidential commission.
But Prof, are we not getting ahead of ourselves?
Well, I mean, you can have several commissions of inquiry. Nothing good will come out of it. But because I know what the plea bargaining process is all about, I'm saying that the Attorney General ought not to have done what he did. If he wanted to do a bad job, he would have been accompanied by the Director of Public Prosecution or by one of the deputies or the prosecutor himself, the accused persons and their lawyers. But this was a very clandestine meeting. He had been to was recorded. He didn't know, he must have been aware that he was being recorded. But from the account of the report, I'm convinced that he saw it.
Sorry for barging in. So, are we not getting ahead of ourselves? We may not be privy to the entire facts as to whether the AG went there voluntarily or he was invited or he was ambushed in the process. These facts are yet to come out.
Only a naive person will do what they are saying, and I don't think it is a naive person. You see? That's why I said, as Attorney General, he ought to have realized that accepting such an invitation would be tantamount to his downfall. He accepted it, he alone knew why he didn't accept it. And if the act has fallen, it has fallen. He must go. He has compromised himself. He cannot go to our court, our court of law and equity. He who come to equity must come cleaner. Once he comes at tainted, he cannot come to equity. And therefore, you know, coming to equity through the form of equity follows the law. But the point, if you not follow the law, if it is not human, you have to know, I respect it. He's done, you know, his base. The time has come for him to go. Just like Austin Emita had to go in a similar plea bargaining deal. Such deals always mess. Yeah, I mean, it depends on how you go about. The Attorney General has gone about it in a rather scandalous manner. And has, you know,
What about the Supreme Court judge who may have extended the invitation?
I don't know, but if it is true that the meeting took place at the house of the Supreme Court judge,
right.
It must be indeed. The Chief Justice is the credible reason. The person that we have is the Chief Justice. But let us wait until we know who this Supreme Court judge maybe is not like, just like you called me a professor, I'm not a professor. So maybe a magistrate who is being referred to as a sitting justice of the Supreme Court. When we get to that, we know how to talk. We haven't read the debate yet.
And again, the other issue is about the impact this will have, or this should have, on the substantive case in court. The substantive case is about allegation of causing financial loss to the state leveled against the minority leader. The other matter, probably, a case of misconduct. Can these two cases be on their own without conflicting, or this muddies the waters even more?
I don't think we should make the subject two. They are quite different and distinct. Clearly, the ongoing criminal trial, merely because the attorney general has compromised himself, to me, it's not a solution. It would rather be a solution instead of a problem. What we have to do is to make sure that the attorney general, is the team, the director of public safety, to take over, because they are two different topics to the steps, and therefore, both steps, whether they are involved or not, ought not to go to the trial, because that criminal is pushing for it. So, the director of public security, must be the person to pursue the further prosecution of the case.
Right.
For me, the attorney general must be tried himself. The attorney general has to be tried. Not only must he resign, but he must be tried.
And then,
this government has been engulfed by scandal upon scandal. And the time has come for the general public not to appear to be doing anything by way of damage control, that let us see the new defense of the minister, to repair what is an obvious scandal. We shouldn't do that, we should allow. I don't think the president has the political will to ask the attorney general to resign. After the attorney general to resign, he said it's a reputation. The president won't do it. And if the president will do this, that's why he will say the matter, the attorney general's best friend, he said that he is the special prosecutor, and the rest will be, in history. That's all. That was the drama we are going to have. If the attorney general doesn't resign and the president doesn't start him, the media, the fourth entity, must rather stand tall and be called. But the way we have started, is like we want to get up the matter and see the scene of the attorney general and the leader.
I get you. And then finally, do you support the NDC? They've announced a news conference tomorrow to make public this secret recording. Do you support it be made public?
Sure. Why not? As director of the law school, I was tried by the Court of Public Opinion with television, as the director of the law school. You have done nothing. The attorney general, do I support it or not? The attorney general's office is greater than the office of the director of the law school. So I support it, not because I was once a victim, but because the truth must come out.
All right. Thank you very much, Professor Ansari, former director of the Ghana School of Law, a veteran, media practitioner, and now into private practice. And of course, the NDC, they've announced that tomorrow they hold a news conference in the afternoon to bring to the public domain evidence they claim implicates the Attorney General in his attempt to coerce a witness in the ongoing trial of the minority leader Kesah Latofosen in the ambulance case, which the minority leader is accused of causing financial loss to the state. So tomorrow they say that they'll put this evidence out. And this evidence, for what we have been told, is a secret recording that took place in the home of a sitting Supreme Court judge between this Supreme Court judge, the Attorney General Godfrey Ewo Adamim, and of course, Mr. Dapa, who is one of the accused persons in the ambulance matter. So we'll look forward to this matter tomorrow. My understanding is also that the Attorney General, they have their own set of evidence they'll be putting forth tomorrow. So tomorrow clearly is something that you cannot miss here on the Pulse on Joy News. But away from that, the PLC March 2024 validation report has revealed that the Electricity Company of Ghana has for the first time complied fully with payment to energy sector players under the cash waterfall mechanism. According to the report, ECG recorded revenue worth more than 1 billion cedis in March 2024 and has made payment to sector players, including independent power producers. The Joy News Research Desk has been combing through the report, and as the Kofi Aje joins me in studio, Kofi, this will be good news.
Some good news, but there is an element of one other player not also complying with what they are supposed to do under the cash waterfall mechanism. So it's a mixed bag of.
So this is March 2024.
Yeah, March 2024.
We are here to see April, May.
Yeah.
So let's talk about March.
In fact, what's positive about March is the fact that for the first time since November 2023, we are seeing ECG's revenue collected in that month exceeding 1 billion Ghana cedis. Approximately 1.003 billion cedis, and this is significant, yeah, compared to the previous figure that they recorded somewhere, you know, February 2023. If you do the math, that's about 20% increase.
Isn't it accounted for this?
Well, the PRC doesn't really state the reason, but we know that ECG has faced some backlash in terms of their revenue collection.
Right.
We know that they were supposed to merge their 62 account to one single account for consolidation. If they have done all of these things and the backlash and also the PRC's orders that they gave them, if they are followed, then we think that they can be the reason why we may have such high revenue inflow. And this time, usually what happens is that they share this money under the cash waterfall mechanism amongst the sector players, the level A and the level B. And you saw the utility workers saying that ECG is giving too much preference to the IPPs.
And the IPP consume the level A.
The level A. So the independent power producers are the ones, Sonnen & Sorgli, the Send Power and all of those guys are the IPPs. They produce our thermal power, is about 64% of our dependable capacity. Now, the level B are usually SOEs, state-owned enterprise,
BRA, BRICO.
And ECG itself is included in this mix. And they've been complaining that in terms of the disbursement to the level B, ECG has not really been complying. Mm-hmm. But what is the case? Under the cash waterfall mechanism, it is anticipated or estimated that always there will be shortfalls.
Right.
And this year, the total shortfall is around 23 billion Ghana cedis. Mm-hmm. And we expect the finance ministry to come in to do this, what they call the top-up payments.
Right.
And since August 2023, finance ministry has never, August 2023 to March 2024, they've not paid a single amount to the cash waterfall mechanism to support the...
So this amount that finance ministry is supposed to pay is to complement what is collected by ECG?
Yes. Complement it, and then also to make sure that the cash waterfall mechanism or the energy sector doesn't accrue debt going forward. Under the IMF program, that's one of the big responsibility of government. They've seen that the energy sector is a debt-making machine.
Right.
And if you're able to stop it, government will have that fiscal space to breathe. So going forward, what you're supposed to do is that you're supposed to prevent the accumulation of additional debt by the finance ministry coming
also making their contribution.
Yes, but we know that they have faced challenges in terms of getting liquidity because there's no bonds market at the moment. no international capital market. The only market probably the finance ministry is relying heavily on is the T-bills, and that's a bit shallow at the moment, looking at the current rate, which is no longer attractive. And so we've been doing a calculation,
right?
About $1.4 billion, a billion Ghana cedis, is how much the finance ministry is owing under the cash waterfall mechanism since August 2023.
August to March.
To the end of March.
Yes,
2023. That's the amount they are supposed to pay, but they've not paid.
And the implications of this is what?
Yes, I mean, the payment that's supposed to be done by the finance ministry is the one that we're supposed to use to help with the fuel purchases. We are learning for the first time from this report that WAPCO has been added to the level B players, meaning that WAPCO is now being treated as, with priority. And they were paid $4 million under the current report, which means that going forward, they have to continue making some of these payments. So long as you use their pipelines and their natural gas, you need to pay. And the finance ministry must come in to do the payment. They've been separated from the VRA. Now WAPCO is an existing independent body and is captured under the level B category.
So how was this $1.3 billion distributed?
If you look at the $1.3 billion, about the significant portion, always, that's the case, about
went to the IPP.
The IPP, 620 million Ghana, so that's about $43 million went to the IPP.
But I'm curious to know, last week we were told by the finance minister that they've made $400 million payment to the IPPs.
Mm-hmm.
Is it outside of this?
Well, $400 million is from the second tranche we got from the IMF.
Okay.
So it's not the finance minister who is even saying this for the first time. The governor also said that significant portion of that $600 million we received from the IMF, the second tranche, was used to pay energy sector debt.
Literally consumed by the energy bills.
Exactly. That's why I said that the IMF is aware that the energy sector is a debt-making machine. If you leave it like that, it can generate about $2 billion of debt every year, and you need to stop it. That is why they don't want arrears to be accumulated, because the more they accumulate, the more they attract interest. Mm-hmm. So the IMF is, tagging it as a priority, and then they want to make sure that they clear that space. And going forward, entities like the finance ministry must come in to make sure that they do their top-up payments and we do not go forward with additional debts. Mm. But now they are doing the same thing they are not supposed to do, and they owe close to $140 million.
So under the circumstances, we expect the SOEs to be at least happy.
Yes.
As far as March is concerned.
Yes, March is concerned. This is the first time SOEs are being paid what they are due in full. I watched the table and I was surprised to see the variance side is zero. There's no SOE that has not been paid the full amount. Each of the SOEs under the cash waterfall mechanism have been paid what they are due, and this is good news out
there. Is there a recommendation going forward so that this is sustained?
Yeah, PRC doesn't give you outright recommendations, but what they say is that entities like the finance ministry who are owing and who are not doing their responsibility, they keep on issuing letters to them, trying to see when they will make that payment. They've been issuing that letter since August. It's more or less like a template. It's always in their validation report. The same wording and everything is there, and the finance ministry is not paying attention to it. And possibly it could be the reason why we may have certain challenges going forward. They need to come in to plug the holes in terms of the energy sector shortfalls. 23 billion Ghana cedis for the entire year. It's no joke.
It's no joke. Finally, before you go, you conclude that in terms of the PLC issues with VCG on the cash waterfall mechanism, this completely answers that question.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. This is good news. Let me just say that it's good news, especially for the state-owned enterprises. The first time they are being paid, especially after the public utility sector workers complain that give priority to the sector B players. There's Bui there, there's Greco,
of course,
was also supposed to do the transmission. All of these guys were being owed. Mm-hmm. And this time around, ECG has paid everybody. The good news is that they were also able to collect enough to pay
within the period.
Within the period, mm-hmm. over 1 billion Ghana cedis is significant.
That's some good news, and of course, that's from the energy decks. Now, a story that's battling her own allergies, Ivy Eyonam found relief in the greenery of her home. And we have that story coming your way pretty soon here on Joy News. Take a short break and we'll be back. This is a pause here on Joy News. Now let's deal with some other health-related stories. And now battling her own allergies, Ivy Egonam found relief in the greenery of her home. Now through her program, Sip and Soil, she's on a mission to spread the lifting gospel, teaching others in a fun and engaging way how indoor plants can combat air pollution. Clean Air Beat reporter Michael Ashali has more in the following report.
For cocktails, plants, and painting, really, what do they have in common? I'm not sure I know, but a Ghanaian is taking on that daunting task to find the middle ground. She's trying to link all three to air quality.
In a plush restaurant in the heart of Accra, music fills the air. Over 24 patrons are seated, but not for a meal. Instead of cutlery sets, they hold paint brushes. With each stroke, they transform their flower pots into remarkable pieces.
I am looking for ways to encourage people and to educate people about clean air.
After trying so many therapies to deal with her spontaneous allergies without success, Ivy Engenam Kufe settled on a rather unconventional therapy, indoor plants.
I have a history of asthma. These days I don't have asthma anymore. I still have a little bit of allergies, but it's no longer severe. And it's only when I am close to something I'm allergic to. But for me, it all started with plants. Now, when I started with plants, I thought, oh, I want something that will clean my air. And I went online because my air was bad and so I was always sick. So I went online and saw plants that can clean your air. And that's how I started.
Indoor air pollutants are everyday substances that can affect the air quality at home. These include dust, pet dander, mold, and chemicals from cleaning products or furniture, smoke from cooking, as well as gas from heaters or stoves. These pollutants can potentially cause allergies, asthma, and other health problems.
When you have an electrical outlet in your house and it gets so hot, there's this particular scent that comes out, that's ozone. When they get into your body, they just attack anything. So plants are able to absorb these free radicals.
Dr. Gladys Ode Schwinger is a plant taxonomist and a lecturer at the University of Ghana. Despite the limited evidence supporting the air purifying effect of indoor plants, she remains convinced otherwise.
Yes, there are studies that have gone on that would say these are not substantiated and all, but pockets of studies have also shown that particular plants absorb particular air pollutants. So depending on what exactly you are trying to curb. But generally, if you want fresh air, having plants indoor would be a great thing. Each plant may be able to absorb certain pollutants. So variety is the spice of life. When you have different types, then you be able to take care of most of your indoor pollutions.
Ghana is the sixth most polluted country on the continent according to the 2023 annual World Air Quality Report. Ivy Engenam looks forward to the day when everyone will be concerned about the air they breathe, so that from person to person, home after home, community to community, we will passionately spread the word and inspire others to prioritize air quality.
There's going to be a nationwide tour. There are going to be some stunts pulling in Accra as well. And there are going to be more workshops. And I'm not going to stop until there's every plant or there's a plant in every space.
Sip and soil. A fun and intuitive way to teach the next generation of plant lovers.
This is literally my first pot at AFI, and I'm very proud of.
Actress Adoma has accepted the challenge.
I'm proud of myself, so you have no idea.
Yeah, for 3 months?
Yeah, since February. They haven't quite hours of that pot. So before, in a week, I killed a cactus.
That should tell you something. I killed a cactus.
It's very necessary because at this rate, we might not have a gala in a few years. If we keep cutting, please let's not cut trees. If we keep cutting trees and not, you know, caring about plants, yeah.
Bright Agbetise is with Ghana Think, a youth-focused professional group.
Yeah, so we know the plants around us, they take the bad air and give us good air. So we are also very much interested in plants because if you're able to have plants within your space, probably your home, your room, what it does is that within that space that you have the plants, it cleans the air.
In the quest for cleaner air, nurturing indoor plants can be a powerful ally, bringing the purifying touch of nature into our homes. This story was a collaboration with New Narratives. Funding was provided by the Clean Air Fund. The funder had no say in the content of the story.
For Ivy and her friends, this is just the beginning. For Joy News, Michael Ashale.
Alright, so now let's talk about agriculture, because an initiative making a significant impact in agricultural sector through the empowerment of young girls. This initiative aims to bridge the gender gap in agriculture by providing opportunity to young girls, enabling them to become future leaders in this vital industry. Eyonam is also of the Ghanaian Farmer on Joy Prime and joins me in the studio. Eyonam, you're welcome.
Thank you.
I've always been watching you on TV talking agri here and there.
Really? I'm
today
happy.
When we are here. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank
and
you
I must
very
congratulate
much
you're doing a fantastic job in agriculture. How do you see people of your kind take up this role and you are impacting so many people?
I know.
And I want to bring in young people into this space. Why?
So this whole initiative of going into farming, telling the stories of farmers, started 2020 because growing up, I would cry my eyes out if my dad says, come and let's go to the farm. And so today when he sees me, you know, all over the bush, and he's like, is this you or it's not you?
I said, I'm the north. I said, wow. The ambition is too great.
Tell me, I said, I'm the one because...
PenFed Free Checking offers zero fees and zero balance requirements for zero hassle. PenFed Access America Checking lets you earn money on your balance for dreams big and small. Choose the best account for you and start making the most of your money. Learn more at PenFed.org. Federally insured by NCUA. To receive any advertised product, you must become a member of PenFed Credit Union.
Ah, the sizzle of McDonald's sausage. It's enough to make you crave your favorite breakfasts. Enough to head over to McDonald's. Enough to make you really wish this commercial were scratch and sniff.
And if you're a sausage person, now get two satisfyingly savory sausage McGriddles, sausage biscuits, or sausage burritos for just $3.33. Or mix and match. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
The Honda you want is here, so drive in the moment with the versatile CR-V or Accord, both named a Car and Driver 10 Best. And when you're driving a Honda, you're driving the brand named Kelley Blue Book's KBB.com Best Value Brand for 2023.
See dealer for financing details. Car and Driver, December 2023, based on 2023 brand image awards from Kelley Blue Book. Visit KBB.com for more information.
It's officially grilling season at the Home Depot. So don't miss Memorial Day savings on grills happening now, so you can celebrate with a backyard barbecue for the whole block. Step up your grill game and serve up a feast with the Next Grill 4-Burner Gas Grill, with durability to last summer after summer. On special buy, only $199. Get ready for a whole summer of entertaining at the Home Depot. how doers get more done.
Right now during Ram season, well-qualified current FCA lessees get a low-mileage lease on the 2024 Ram 1500 Tradesman Crew Cab 4x4 for $279 a month for 42 months with $4,309 due at signing. Tax, title license extra. No security deposit required. Call 1-877-RAM-5722 for details. Requires dealer contribution and lease through Stellantis Financial. Current vehicle must be registered to consumer at least 30 days prior to lease to qualify. Extra charge for miles over 35,000. Not all customers will qualify. Residency restrictions apply. Take delivery by 6-3.
Farmers have done a lot. When we talk about sectors that create most employment, agriculture is one of them.
Right.
However, little is said about the effort they make, not to talk about highlighting the plight of these farmers. So a journalist and a communicator, I decided to carve a niche for myself and make farmers' case my personal case. And this is how far we've come. Now, 4 years into the journey, a lot of both young men, young women would impulse you with different requests.
Right.
Either I want to go into farming, but I don't know what to plant, or I have the land, I don't have the resources, or I have the resources, but I don't have the knowledge. How can you help me? Or there are those who are home and don't have a job. They are desperate. They are, you know, having issues with government and institutions.
Exactly.
I'm a graduate. I don't have a job to do and all that. It would, I don't know if you saw this, but some weeks ago, we even had colleges, graduate from our great colleges, who said they were going to call press conference because there's no job or state farms.
Can you imagine?
To employ them.
Yeah.
So I was like, why should it be so? Because I'm making a living from agriculture when I haven't studied agriculture.
Right.
So Canton Crops is the mother company that produces the Ghanaian farmer for these 4 years. And so in the fourth year, we realized that the requests that are coming are so many. Now, if we want partners, especially like donors, to support us roll out initiative, we would need an NGO. And so we had to register YOFDO, Young Farmers Development Organization. And YOFDO, we have a lot of initiatives we want to run. And one of them is Agric for Girls.
Okay.
Agric for Girls, because among the SDGs, we're looking at eradicating poverty. That's goal one. How would we eradicate poverty in the absence of jobs? So we want to partner or look for young women who are passionate, looking forward to exploring opportunities, but they do not know how to go about it, to introduce them to these opportunities. For example, like what I do, social agriculture.
Right.
I go into farm, I talk to farmers. Through that, I also started farming myself. I make a living from posting, you know, fertilizer for a certain company. I post seed for a certain company. People would call you, hey, come by my farm and promote me, and you earn a living. I'm not just holding a smartphone for the beauty of it, but this is what put food on my table.
Exactly.
So I want to train other young women to do a job like this. Yes. And then there are other companies, like those who will train them to start mushroom. Mushroom, you don't need a big space. With a little space, you can start your mushroom farming.
What has been the interest?
So,
are people showing so much interest in this?
It's been amazing. Ever since we even dropped the flyer to go and discuss dates and who should we meet and all that, the interest has been overwhelming.
Right.
A lot of people are expressing interest, and you know, this is what I've been looking forward to. How can you help me start something? Because for a very long time, a lot of young people thought farming is all about the cattle and the hoe. But it goes beyond that. There are aggregators, there are social agriculture like me, there are those who are doing value addition, marketing. So why don't you find a niche for yourself and make a living than staying home and getting frustrated?
So clear that there's future for farming.
Exactly. There's a big future for farming. If you're out there and you still don't know what to do in the area of agric, you want to look for the Ghanaian farmer across all social media platform, the Ghanaian farmer. There is only one Ghanaian farmer in Ghana. And that is me. So just look for me.
Undisputed.
That's it.
Undisputed.
So just look for me or come Wednesday, 29th of May, let's meet at ISA Conference Hall at Lagon, 9 a.m. prompt. You'll be meeting the overall national best farmer, woman farmer, the woman who won recently, Madam Charity Akotia. She'll be there to share her journey. How she started from 1 acre and today she's been crowned the overall winner. She'll teach you how to go about it. Exactly. We'll have the Deputy Agric Minister, Honorable Your Friend Paul Addo. We have Timanke. She is also the owner of NBC Africa. She also has an organization that has so much love for young women. she will be there as well. Okay. And of course, our very own Dr. Naba, who used to be with Prison Farmers. Now he is heading Ekuafon Ketua. Mm-hmm. He works with a lot of women. So we brought him on board to also come and encourage, empower these young women and help them to know what they can do in the area of
So who are you targeting? Is it open to everybody?
So it's young women between the age of 18 all the way to 35.
Mm-hmm.
Or 40, we might consider. Yes, and so when you come, we have five dimensions, like I had mentioned. Mm-hmm. We are looking at the agribusinesses that doesn't demand a lot of funding for you to do.
Okay.
Like, you know, the mushroom thing, the social agriculture, or your smartphone.
Okay.
Buying and selling from farmers. You just have to create a brand on digital media.
Mm.
That is your office. That's your marketplace. Get a list of what you want to buy this weekend. Mm. I'll shop for you. Drop it at your doorstep. Pay me and let me go.
Yeah.
That's my business. Then we have
there's so many areas.
That's a lot.
It's not just about
agro-tourism
and the weed.
No. Agro-tourism. Build a career or brand for yourself as someone who is agro-tourism. People reach out to you. Also come to Ghana every now and then.
Mm.
They would reach out to you. You book the hotels. Meet the farmers. Get a van, take them round, make good money from this. I mean, what else can you know think about?
Final words, and then, I mean, the venue, the time, restate it.
My final words is that every young person out there, especially if you're in Ghana,
mm-hmm.
make agriculture or agribusiness your personal case, because it is worth it. It is a rewarding career.
Right.
For you to find out how to go about it or to start your journey in agribusiness,
mm-hmm.
come Wednesday, 29th May, Wednesday.
This Wednesday.
This Wednesday, be at Legon, University of Ghana,
mm-hmm.
and then ask them for the ESA conference hall.
Mm-hmm.
When you come there, you go through the registration process. We do the official launching. Right after the launching,
mm-hmm.
we'll open the portal for registration.
Right.
Those who are interested.
Okay.
And then we'll group them into what they are. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And then the training takes off from there. So all that's right. what
Thank I you so much share. For passing to always
You're
a pleasure
welcome.
To see
Thank
you.
Thank you very much.
And I'm there for you. So is this Wednesday. But before we go, a story that all of us have been waiting for. Head of Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology Department of the Kolobo Teaching Hospital, Dr. Isaac Osei-Kwantin, says he's worried about the increasing number of Ghanaian women opting to give birth through elective cesarean section instead of vaginal delivery. Even though worrying for him is the reason for the option, pains at birth and expansion of their vagina after delivery.
A trend is coming up where our women, for some reason, they want to be delivered by cesarean section without going into labor. I think it's a very dangerous trend. It's a dangerous trend in that, by the grace of God, cesarean section is very safe nowadays. I mean, compared to part when Julius Caesar and co were living, now it's safe. But every surgery has a risk. So going for something, you know, as the natural means is by vaginal delivery. But having said that, we should also note the fact that it is not everybody that can deliver vaginally, because your pelvic is a space, and what is coming through the pelvis should be able to go through the safe safely. So when there's a reason why the baby's head is bigger than the pelvis, the baby can be there for years. It will never come. It will kill the mother and kill the baby. The reason why women are opting for elective cesarean section without going through labor is the fear of the pain, basically. Most women think they can't stand the labor pain. And of course, my wife has gone through cesarean section. She has gone through labor pain. I can tell you, labor pain is not present. I sat with my wife throughout the labor. But the good news about labor pain is it's not continuous. It gives you breaks in between. So you have the contraction, you have a pain. It will give you about 5 minutes break. Then you rest. Then it will come again about 30 seconds. It will give you break. And when the baby comes out, you are free forever. So one of the reasons why women are doing that is basically because of the fear of the liver pain. And secondly, some also think, I mean, very few of them think that when the baby is big, it passes through that introitus will become large and they can't tighten it again. So they want the introitus to remain tightened. That's why some of the reasons people give. But those who give that reason is not a lot, you know. So in such a case, when the doctors request or advises you to go for cesarean session, don't think that the doctor enjoy holding the knife. Everybody wants to be free. Everyone wants to sit down and read something. But for me to spend time to go to theater, cut and suture and stand on my feet, it's not too pleasant. But because that is safer for you in that case, for instance, if you have high blood pressure, the only cure, high blood pressure due to pregnancy, the only cure is delivery. And the earlier you deliver, the better. If you wait...
Right, so let's get some perspective on this matter briefly. And then Dr. Osei Kwantin joins me via Zoom. Dr., good afternoon and welcome to the poll. So educate me. I mean, for women who give birth through the natural means, is there any truth in the fact that they may have enlarged, you know, vagina after going through the natural way? And if you can unmute for me, Doctor. We still cannot get to the audio. Doctor, if you can unmute for me, I just want to find out, is there any truth in the fact that by giving birth through the natural way, you end up enlarging your private part? Oh, I guess we'll try and then get the connection sorted out so that we can have a conversation as we begin to wrap up on the pause for this afternoon. And the issue is about cesarean and natural way of giving birth, the concerns for the two options, yes, I can hear you, Doctor. So my question still stands. Okay. Is there any truth in the fact that after going through the natural way, the woman enlarges the private part?
It's not totally true in the sense that the introductus is very expansive. It can expand to any level. Looking at the head of the baby, which is able to go through, tells you how expansive the introductus is. So you will be able to come back to your normal size after delivery, because anything that can expand can also contract.
Right.
So if the expanse allow baby to go through after delivery, it comes back to normal. Having said that, we know that anything that can expand and can also come back to normal position, with time, will not be able to attain its original size.
Mm.
So if you keep giving birth, and especially the babies are big, then with time, you realize that you can't attain the original size, which is a price to pay. But by and large, giving birth to one or two, it's not going to affect the introductus significantly. Thank you.
But again, the cesarean or natural way, it has its own pros and cons. And I'm sure that medically, you have to come to a determination whether to allow the person to have cesarean or go to the natural way. I mean, educate us on what circumstances they can be applicable.
Definitely, the natural way to give birth to for the baby to come through the introductus, that is natural. But in anything, when we have the natural, there are exceptions to the natural rule. And one of the exceptions is that if the baby is bigger than the passage, no matter what you do, the baby cannot come through. And so if you insist of allowing the baby to come through the introductus, the uterus with time will get tired. And if the uterus gets tired, it will burst or it will rupture. Right. And kill the mother and kill the baby. So in such a situation, the best mode of delivery is by cesarean section. And the other condition that, although the baby is not coming with the head, but the baby is lying across the mother. It's like forming a cross.
Right.
So the baby cannot come through. In such a case, cesarean section is the best. If there are scars on the uterus, and allowing the uterus to expand and contract is going to allow the scar to give way and rupture, then of course, that is why when you have two cesarean sessions, it is advisable to have all the remaining deliveries through cesarean session, because that scar is weak and it can rupture. So there are reasons why we allow for cesarean sessions. And those reasons are important reasons, and they are reasons whereby if you don't allow for cesarean session and you allow vagina, there may be consequences either to the mother or to the baby. Once the baby is not breathing well in the womb and the labor is not advanced for the baby to come out within the next minutes to an hour, about 4 hours, a baby who is struggling, who is gasping for breath in the womb, if you allow such a baby to stay, obviously by the time the baby is time for the baby to come out, the baby would have died. So when we diagnose such a thing during labor, we call it midwife distress. We definitely advise you to allow eggs to take the baby out so that the baby can breathe fresh air or be resuscitated by the expert for the baby to leave. So these are some of the reasons why we do cesarean section, but they are a lot. I mean, they are uncomfortable.
Right. But Dr. Frante, so therefore, that will be my final question. Would you advise that when pregnant women get to that stage, they should allow the professionals to give the final decision on this, rather than them having an option as to how I want my baby to come out?
Definitely. That is why we go to school. We go to school to learn and to understand the pathophysiology of the things that we do. And I keep telling people, if I assess you and I think that it's not advisable to deliver vaginally, I can't force you. If you disregard my advice and you opt for vaginal delivery, partly we've had people losing their babies by not paying heed to the doctor's advice. That's why we need time to explain, and we need time to educate the women why we do cesarean section. Some even for religious purposes. Long time ago, a patient came to the labor referral from elsewhere and said that the pastor has said that he should not go under the knife, you know. And the indication for the reason why she had to go under the knife was that the baby was in fetal distress and imminent fetal demise was about to happen. No matter what we told this lady, she refused and the baby died. And after the death of the baby, having gone through labor and she was tired, now agreed to have the cesarean section. We have to remove a dead baby for her. This is a very pathetic story. So we should...
And do you get more of such religious influence cases at the hospital?
Oh yes, we do. We do get some of these religious cases in the office. Not just for cesarean surgery, for other surgeries, life-saving surgeries. So there are these places where you need to talk to the pastor. For the pastor to convince the lady before the baby what. People have died because they refused blood transfusion. I mean, every year, including this year, people have died where the only way out for them to live is to get blood. HB3 point something. Means that it was God who was sustaining them at that time. But they still refused the blood transfusion till they died.
Because the pastor says so.
Yes, because their religious belief will not allow them to take blood. And sometimes the pastor said they shouldn't go for the surgery. So on one or two occasions, we need to call the pastor, explain everything to the pastor. When the pastor talked to them, they agreed. So it's a big issue. Cultural beliefs and religious beliefs have really affected our health delivery in this country.
All right. Thank you so much for your time, Dr. Cranton.
Welcome.
Thank you so much. So that's our show, folks. For more stories, log on to our website, myjoyonline.com. Stories on myjoyonline.com. Stream side calls for Commission of Inquiry into allegation against the Attorney General. We are not talking about guinea fowl projects, but you know, projects that will move the country forward. That's Dr. Mamadou Bawumia. You see him and the NDC flyer, John Dramani Mahama, at the CEO's summit. Well, that's it. Whatever you are up to in the hours ahead, I hope it's profitable.